This is Radio Health Journal, a weekly news magazine with the latest in health, medicine, and technology. A closer look at the issues that affect your health and well-being. Prevention, lifestyles, treatments and trends, all from the nation's top experts. I'm Shel Lustig.
I'm Nancy Benson.
And I'm Reed Pence. This week, new ways to lessen the wartime toll of PTSD.
Our soldiers, they wear a helmet to protect their brain in battle. They wear armor trying to protect themselves. What we really need to do is give them an armor for the mind.
Then, is reality TV the modern version of the old-fashioned freak show?
When you see someone on television who has dozens of dead cats in their house and does not actually think this is problematic, it's really shocking to watch.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
Every year, nearly 500,000 people are treated for sports-related head injuries at U.S. hospital emergency rooms. Football alone contributes to an estimated 300,000 concussions per year. Here are some injury prevention tips from Dr. James Rutka, president of the American Association of Neurological Surgeons.
By being prepared in advance, you can help prevent potentially tragic injuries. Wear approved, properly fitting helmets for sports in which they are recommended. And always wear a helmet when biking and skateboarding. If you suffer a concussion or head injury, do not return to play, school, or work until you are cleared by a healthcare professional. Remember, there's always another game, but you only have one brain.
Visit the American Association of Neurological Surgeons website at aans.org and click on Patient Information for free facts on sports-related head injury. That's aans.org.
Millions of American men enlisted in the military in the wake of Pearl Harbor and the country's entrance into World War II. Jerry Yellen was one of them. He signed up with the Army Air Corps on his 18th birthday in February of 1942. By the time he was 21, he was a squadron leader landing his P-51 on Iwo Jima. What he saw there shook him to his soul.
There were 28,000 dead bodies, 3,500 per square mile, and the sites of 7,000 American Marines in the mortuary, and the sites of the mass burials of 21,000 Japanese soldiers in the mass graves, and the fact that I flew with 16 young guys who didn't come back out of 35 guys in our squadron, and then there was nothing. There was nothing in life. And I had an empty feeling about life. I couldn't talk to my parents. I couldn't talk to my sister. I couldn't share any of my experiences. A lot of guys that I knew took up drugs and took up alcohol and other diversions. I took up golf, and I was addicted to golf for 30 years.
Yellen says there wasn't really any help for shell shock or battle fatigue back then, and men rarely admitted to suffering it. By the Gulf War in the early 1990s, the condition had a new name, post-traumatic stress disorder. The symptoms started for then-Staff Sergeant Sue Lynch when a Scud missile hit right next to her compound.
I just shut down. I disconnected from my body. I was paralyzed with fear, and I had to have someone help me into my chemical suit. When I returned home, there wasn't any discussion around post-traumatic stress. In fact, as a Reserve and National Guard soldier, you come back to your environment and you go back to civilian life, and oftentimes there aren't many people within your circle that have had the same experience.
So Lynch says after a couple of months of homecomings, celebrations, and getting her bearings, then came the crash.
It's when things are kind of starting to unravel and the impact that I don't feel myself anymore. I'm depressed. I can hardly get out of bed. By the time I was 30, so it was about 10 years of therapy, I could understand intellectually what was going on. I got it. I could see the storm, the emotional storm come when it was coming. But I really wasn't able to manage it from me falling in the hole, the black hole.
The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are especially stressful because no place is safe. Explosive devices may be anywhere, and anyone may be the enemy. Vigilance against that can't simply be turned off when personnel come home. According to some surveys, as many as half of returning National Guard and reservists and about a third of soldiers and Marines admit they've had mental health problems.
For instance, if they're in the street and all of a sudden a car backfires and their memory triggers and thoughts of the perhaps maybe they had an IED explosion, improvised explosive device that went off near them or something. That can bring up things like that.
Dr. David Leffler, formerly of the U.S. Army War College, is now executive director of the Center for Advanced Military Science.
Sometimes the veterans will show us a lack of interest in normal daily activities that they once used to enjoy. They can feel detached from reality. Often they'll have problems with sleeping, concentrating, and have difficulty managing their anger and showing emotion. Particularly, though, a lot of things that they'll see is what we mentioned earlier, this exaggerated startle response, where all of a sudden they're back in the battlefield again, even though they may have been out for years. It could be they fought in Vietnam.
We understand the longevity of PTSD and how long you can hold on to the trauma that we suffer more, and we deny it often because we should be strong enough. But once we're able to really acknowledge that, yeah, that was traumatic, that was difficult, I saw some stuff that really I want to forget about, I wish I had a delete button, and realizing that I don't, and how can now I manage what is and still be able to live a full life.
With suicides climbing, the military realizes it has to do something more about the mental damage that afflicts so many returning veterans. But what direction the military and the VA may take is still open to research and debate. No matter what methods are used, experts say that it's important, first of all, for servicemen and women to feel they have permission to tell their stories. Many veterans think that others who've never been through it won't understand or won't even care. So they clam up and won't reach out for help.
In depathologizing the experience of what happens to people in war, we hope to be able to remove some of the stigma of the idea that it's inevitable that you're going to have PTSD and that you're going to be flawed and crazy.
Kay Coker is a licensed clinical social worker in private practice in Atlanta and co-director of Veterans Heart, Georgia.
The military is really working on the stigma, at least from the top down, the stigma against asking for help because you're a coward and a deserter and a shirker and all that sort of thing, and a whiner, that's another term. That seems to be diminishing just a little. And the families need a lot of help and a lot of work. And the military, it appears that they're working on addressing some of the needs of the families, at least families in the regular Army. The National Guard and the Reserves are a little bit left out in terms of that work because they don't live on post and everything. The VA varies from town to town. Some VA hospitals are excellent, others are not in terms of the treatment programs.
Lynch found peace through yoga, Reiki, and meditation. Today, her program, called There and Back Again, based in Charlestown, Massachusetts, uses those and other disciplines to help veterans navigate life after war. But she admits that in spite of good results, sometimes yoga is a tough sell to fighting men.
We go through all the information about how yoga helps, and I say, okay, and I know I'm still a girl here. I know I've been enlisted, I'm an officer, I'm still a girl. Let me hear from one of the Marines that works with us, and, you know, I have a video of the Marine. Once we can get over the it's just for girls or it's new agey, and show the impact, and it can be challenging, but it also can be very meditative, and have them experience it, they're in it. The common testimonial, so to speak, is that I have, from Vietnam veterans to current veterans, is I haven't felt this sense of peace ever or since before Vietnam, that they're able to get them to a place that they can just be still and peaceful and sleep. And sleep is huge. Many can't sleep more than an hour and a half, 2 hours a night.
Dr. David Leffler says once they've overcome those new agey objections, many other veterans have used transcendental meditation to bring their PTSD under control. World War II vet Jerry Yellen has used it for 40 years.
Meditation was started 5,000 or 6,000 years ago in Japan and India as a warrior's technique, and meditating for the samurai warrior was a discipline. And meditating for our warriors is a discipline.
Researchers at the University of Colorado School of Medicine, they demonstrated that the TM practice had positive effects on the symptoms associated with PTSD. And so instruction in the technique, followed by 3 months of regular TM practice, significantly reduced emotional numbness, the anxiety, the startle response, depression, alcohol consumption, insomnia, and family problems. And also the group that practiced transcendental meditation reported improvements in their sleep and obtaining and keeping on employment. What's really interesting about this study was is that 70% of the meditators reported that they no longer require the services of the Veterans Center.
Treating servicemen and women who've returned from deployment is certainly a good thing. But many experts believe that the mental damage of combat may be lessened or even prevented if troops are trained before they're deployed in what are called mindfulness techniques. Dr. Amishi Jha is Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of Miami.
The goal of all of these different variations of what we might describe under the kind of umbrella of mindfulness is been described as being able to pay attention on purpose in the moment and non-judgmentally. So all of those features of attention, kind of keeping a neutral opinion on what the content of your present moment experience is what we would say are the critical features of mindfulness.
What we're working towards is creating the ability to be able to observe one's physical sensations and one's emotions and one's thought processes so that we can step out of reactive patterns that we get caught up in, our habits, our default go-to in terms of thoughts and beliefs and emotional reactions and the physiological reactions that accompany them.
Coker says mindfulness practices include meditation, yoga, tai chi, and qigong. Some of their goals seem unusual to the uninitiated. For example, making practitioners exceptionally aware of specific movements of the body. For example, when the arm is lifted over the head.
How does that feel? What are the sensations here? Mindfulness of the body is one of the foundations of mindfulness, and these foundation practices allow us to create concentration. And this concentration can lead to emotion regulation, which is very crucial, especially in working with trauma. But it also helps people who are not traumatized so that when we get upset or uncomfortable or angry or sad or scared, then we don't have to be overwhelmed with our emotion. We don't have to be flooded.
Coker admits that those descriptions leave some audiences skeptical, especially in the military.
That's why we usually don't call it mindfulness meditation. We call it mind fitness or just mindfulness and stress reduction, things of that nature, to help people understand it in a different terminology so that it's comfortable and accessible and it's not scary and sounds like it's something weird and far out.
What will probably help most in getting mind-body techniques accepted is proof that they work. Leffler has mentioned studies on transcendental meditation, and Coker says research evidence is showing that pre-deployment mindfulness training is extremely effective.
There are two studies that have been published already with the pre-deployment work, and they show very, very good results. Much better results than using medication to help people calm themselves in the war theater or drinking or using other substances to help calm themselves and focus and concentrate and deal with the experiences that they're having.
Obviously, there's a potentially huge savings in both lives and dollars if we can prevent PTSD before it ever starts. The military's moves into mind-body techniques are still in their infancy. About a year and a half ago, the Army introduced a program called Comprehensive Soldier Fitness, designed to increase the resilience of its forces, especially those who will be in combat. But some experts say that program, based on positive psychological concepts, doesn't go far enough. Studies now underway will compare its results to mindfulness practices, including yoga and tai chi. In the meantime, military personnel can find mindfulness practices tailored to their needs offered more informally on many bases or nearby. You can reach Sue Lynch's program for veterans and referrals to similar help around the country at thereandback-again.org. Information on military applications of Transcendental Meditation are available through the Center for Advanced Military Science at strongmilitary.org. Or you can find both through a link on our website, radiohealthjournal.net. I'm Reed Pence.
Coming up, the freakiness of reality TV when Radio Health Journal continues.
Studies show as little as 30 minutes of walking per day can help reduce your risk of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. I'm Vivica Vergara. It's no secret walking is good for your health, but surprisingly, our society today is walking less than ever before, contributing to record high obesity rates. The Department of Health and Human Services says more than two-thirds of adults in our country are overweight or obese. Walgreens, with a health initiative focused on prevention and early detection of today's leading diseases, hopes to reverse the trend through a national walking movement. Walk with Walgreens aims to get Americans walking more on the road to better health and provides healthy rewards for every step you take. Walgreens spokesman Jim Cohn.
We want to inspire people to take the small steps that lead to a well life, making walking even more rewarding. It's free and it's simple, and the more you walk, the more you can save.
Healthy rewards and healthy savings. Sign up at walgreens.com/walk or at any Walgreens photo department. I'm Vivica Vergara.
We're all familiar with the strange images from carnival sideshows of days gone by. Oddities like the bearded lady and the tattooed man. We pride ourselves in being morally superior to people back then who thought it was okay to gawk. But have we really changed all that much? When we watch reality TV, aren't we still gawking at people we deem weird or grotesque? Aren't shows such as My Strange Addiction, Hoarding, Buried Alive, or Obsessed just a modern-day version of the old-fashioned freak show?
These kinds of television exhibitions of people who either psychologically or behaviorally or are different followed the format of the freak show in a number of ways.
That's Robert Bogdan, distinguished professor emeritus of sociology and special education at Syracuse University.
They became almost ritualistic. That is, there was a role that the freak played when they were on stage, and there was a script for them. And the people who were exhibited were active participants in their own exhibition and kind of knew the rules about how to be an exhibit. As you get into these television shows, the same thing holds up. Nobody goes on any of these shows that hasn't seen the show, that doesn't know what's expected of them. So the whole thing is like a staged drama where all the parts and what could happen are pretty much known beforehand. And this isn't like a spontaneous performance. It is a very scripted performance.
Bogdan says reality shows tap the freak show formula in other ways, too. They attempt to legitimize voyeurism by mentioning the scientific and educational aspects of each so-called specimen.
The way the presentations went was that they were hooked into some kind of scientific discussion at the time. A lot of it was about Darwin and the missing link and other kinds of pseudoscientific presentations. And from what I can see of these television freak shows is that they're all kind of backed by pop psychology, or they have an air of legitimacy that is rendered by the professionals who are willing to participate.
Bogdan confesses that he was once one of those professionals, appearing on an episode of the Jerry Springer Show many years ago. He's since come to regret it, but other critics believe reality shows really do have educational value.
Whether a show is like Jerry Springer or The Real World or My Strange Addiction, we end up seeing people who we might not otherwise interact with in our daily lives or know about, but we actually get to see and know them as people, and that makes them into something more than just a freak show, sideshow, because you can actually learn about them, learn about their motivations, their fears, their emotions, and the fact that they're just people with differences.
That's Andy Denhart, assistant professor of journalism at Stetson University and editor of the website realityblurred.com.
If you look at a show like Hoarders, for example, I think people are sort of generally aware that maybe hoarding exists. But when you see someone on television who has kept bags of their own feces or has dozens of dead cats in their house and does not actually think this is problematic, it's really shocking to watch. And in the case of that show, we really get to see what it's like to have a mental illness.
The website for Hoarders Buried Alive promotes the show's exploration of compulsive psychology and their efforts to get help for the individuals afflicted. But some critics of reality TV say the lines between education and exploitation are blurred, especially when mental illness is involved.
While there is nothing, I think, inherently wrong with engaging with difference and staring at other people and somehow recognizing that the world is made up of a variety of different people, I do think there is something wrong with us coming to feel morally superior or intellectually superior by exploiting other people's own vulnerabilities. And I think if these people are truly mentally ill, then they're vulnerable members of society, and us looking at them in a vulnerable moment in no way helps them.
That's Nadia Durbach, Associate Professor of History at the University of Utah and author of the book Spectacle of Deformity, Freak Shows and Modern British Culture.
We like things that challenge boundaries. And so I think what these Jerry Springer type shows do is really challenge the boundary between acceptable and not acceptable behavior. The bad girl shows really challenge what is normal kinds of behavior for women, what are gendered expectations. And I think we really enjoy things that really push the boundaries. The nature of almost all freak show acts were that they inhabited two things at once. The hermaphrodite, who was both male and female. The dog-faced boy, who's both human and animal. And so these very classic freak show acts are always sort of challenging those boundaries, those things that structure who we are.
100 years ago, freak show producers tested that line by traveling the world looking for new and more astounding exhibits. Today, reality TV producers do the same, continually ratcheting up the shock value to lure viewers.
You could watch the progression and the development of reality TV. Some of the earlier versions were a lot tamer compared to what came afterwards. And in some shows, that went almost in the direction of torture, if you think of something like Fear Factor.
That's Mark Andreevich, Associate Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Iowa.
I think there's a way in which extremeness and reality get aligned with one another. And that's maybe got a broader cultural logic to it. Do you want to really feel alive? Do you want to have the sense that you're really experiencing reality? Then you have to push yourself to the edge. You know, you have to do something extreme. And that will kind of break through the numbness of the routines of everyday life.
Durbach says every now and then there's a backlash against carnival freak shows, but every generation that stamps them out ultimately sees them reemerge in some form. It looks like reality TV is today's incarnation. So maybe we should just admit it. We like gawking at people who look or behave differently than we do. But Denhart and Durbach both suggest that when we gawk, maybe we could do it with a bit more presence of mind.
Certainly a lot of reaction to reality television is not compassion. It is judgment. It's criticism. It is mocking. And I have certainly engaged in some of that myself over the years of covering reality television. But I think that even when you do that, if you're laughing at something, you can sort of say, why am I laughing at this? Because it's really not funny. And it can help you examine your own biases and your own beliefs and your own prejudices. And those reactions with a little critical thought can help teach us something by themselves.
Obviously, there is a titillation factor to so much of this that we don't really question or want to, and we don't want to go those places inside ourselves. But I think it behooves us to do it. If we're going to have the permission to watch, we also have to really question, you know, what we are doing there. Watch responsibly.
Our writer-producer this week is Polly Hansen. Our production director is Sean Waldron. I'm Nancy Benson.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
Homeowners, are you struggling with your mortgage, behind on your payments, worried about foreclosure? We can help you avoid foreclosure with a loan modification program. We're loan mitigation experts and can work with your lender to stop foreclosure, reduce your payments, lower your interest rates, and perhaps even reduce your loan. We work with all lenders nationwide. With over 20 years of experience, we know what your lender needs to modify your loan. So give us a call and let's talk it over. It's time to make a fresh start. chart and get back to a happy, comfortable life without worry. Don't let your lender take your home. Call us right now and let one of our friendly counselors tell you how we can help you mitigate your mortgage and stop your lender from foreclosing. There's no pressure or obligation. So call now and let us tell you how we can give you the help you need to save your home.
That's 800-917-2969. 800-917-2969. 800-917-2969.
Medical notes this week. If you have young children, smoke detectors may not wake them up when they're needed most. A study in the journal Fire and Materials shows that 78% of children aged 5 to 15 slept through a smoke alarm sounding for 30 seconds in their homes. And of those who woke up, only half recognized the sound as a smoke alarm. Children aged 5 to 10 were most at risk. 87% of them didn't wake up when the alarm sounded. Gastric bypass surgery is becoming increasingly popular to help severely obese people lose weight, but a new study shows it markedly changes how people metabolize alcohol. Researchers writing in the Journal of the American College of Surgeons tested a group of patients both before and after they had gastric bypass. They found that 6 months after surgery, one glass of wine was enough to get the average patient legally drunk. And finally, it may not take vigorous exercise to keep older people fit. A study in the journal Hort Technology shows that gardening may be enough to increase physical activity and general health. According to the survey of people over age 50, 3/4 of gardeners think their health is either very good or excellent. 80% of gardeners say they don't feel old and tired, compared to only 57% of people who don't tend to flowers and vegetables. And that's Medical Notes this week. More in a moment.
Thousands of Americans just like you are being hounded by the IRS for back tax debt. End the worry and the harassment by calling the Tax Debt Relief Center. That one call will put you in contact with a tax debt specialist, and your call and consultation are free. What can the Tax Debt Relief Center do for you? A team of tax experts can help you settle past tax debts. They can help with penalties and interest. They can help release IRS liens and wage garnishments and stop additional levies and seizures. Stop living with the fear, the uncertainty, and the high monthly payments. The IRS has a team of experts. Don't fight them alone. Get your own team of experts now. If you have $15,000 or more in tax debt, call us now. Call 800-718-2204 for your free consultation. That's 800-718-2204. Call now. 800-718-2204.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. Radio Health Journal is a production of MediaTrax Communications. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and check iTunes for a library of past programs. Plus, you'll always find podcasts of our segments, information about our guests, and the latest health news at radiohealthjournal.net. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.